Welcome to Power Play. On a day Canada got a fresh look in the mirror and saw a lot more Indigenous and visible minority faces right across the country. Coming up, we will plow through the latest national census findings on what is becoming a visible majority in some cities with Statistics Canada, and we will discuss ways to maximize the potential from our Indigenous population surge. Also, underfunded pension plans could leave hundreds of thousands of workers shortchanged after their employer declares bankruptcy. We will talk to an advocate rounding up MP support to put pensions at the front of the liquidation line. And a new study into the dark art of heckling in the House finds a majority of MPs don't like it, but most of them do it anyway. We will discuss verbal harassment on Parliament Hill with the study's author. But first, it's more how we're growing than how much, as the new national census paints Canada in changing colors. Our Indigenous population is exploding, while more than 1 million immigrants over the last 5 years are increasingly heading out west. Couple that with visible minorities becoming the majority in Toronto, and it's a snapshot of Canada in ethnic transition. Let's dive into the details with Jean-Pierre Corbet. He's with Statistics Canada. Jean-Pierre, we've got 1.2 million new immigrants in the last 5 years. Give us a picture of that. Where are they coming from?
Well, if you look at the major metropolitan areas where immigrants settle, we have, for the most part, India, we have China, we have the Philippines. These are the three most important countries, your source countries of immigrants. Quebec is very different in the sense that Haiti, France, and North African countries are the most important places where immigrants come from.
Yeah, so Africa's beating who now? It's like, well, European.
Right now, for the first time, actually, Africa places ahead of Europe.
Wow.
By almost 2 percentage points. And this also has a direct impact on the increase of the black population in Canada, mm-hmm. which now goes above the 1 million threshold. Now we have 1.2 million people who identify as blacks in Canada.
Wow. Now, does this census capture the Syrian refugee arrivals that came in early last year?
Well, actually, we know that about 12% of recent immigrants are refugees. When you look at the share of the recent immigrants who are refugees, mm-hmm. between January 2016 and census day, it's doubled, so it's 24%. And so right now, what we've enumerated about 26,000 Syrian refugees in the census. Right now,
I find it amazing that Alberta actually has more immigrant growth than BC over the last few years. What's that all about?
Well, what we know is that, like the rest of the population, immigrants tend to move to provinces where the economy is booming. And what we've noticed between 2011 and 2016 is that the employment rate of Alberta has surpassed the Canadian national average, mm-hmm. By almost 3 percentage points. Mm-hmm. So certainly the prairie provinces, there are many reasons, but economic factors is certainly one good factor that explains this move.
Visible minorities becoming the majority, at least in the biggest city in Canada, that's the case. But you've also looked at ridings, like electoral ridings, districts, and you've identified a number of them where that's the case too, which has, I would argue, a big impact on how political parties deal with ethnic outreach programs. What have you seen there? How many ridings are we talking about?
Well, I don't have the exact number of ridings, but clearly we know that in Toronto, in Toronto and Vancouver, the share of the population that is seen as a visible minority or identified as visible minorities, mm-hmm. is increasingly visible, if you want. So Richmond, for sure, mm-hmm. we see also visible minorities increasing in peripheral municipalities around Vancouver and around Toronto as well. Mm-hmm. So clearly we see that, because 30% of visible minorities are also born in Canada, so not only immigrants, but the children of immigrants. So we see clearly this population increasing over time.
A jaw-dropping number in terms of the Indigenous population growth. Is that all growth, or there's some suggestion that more Indigenous people are free to identify or openly identifying themselves as such?
Well, this 43% growth over the last 10 years that we've talked about, mm-hmm. For the most part, there are two key factors, high fertility which is very important because we know that the Aboriginal population is younger. But we've noticed changes in self-identification over time, which clearly shows that, and it's not new. It's been a trend over the last, 5 to 10 years. Some people, and depending on the group, for instance, the Métis population is more likely to respond differently to these questions. So there are many reasons that can explain that. We see an increase in the way, or changes in the way, people self-identify.
Wow, amazing story. Okay, thank you for the snapshot. Appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
All right. As we were discussing, it is the youngest and fastest growing demographic in Canada. Indigenous peoples are now 5% of Canada's population, up more than 40% in 10 years. And that is four times the non-Indigenous population growth. This means a lot more children, a number coming in at about 145,000, are in foster care, in substandard classrooms, homes, and receiving welfare services. The new Minister of Action on the Indigenous File had this to say.
It emphasizes the tremendous need for reconciliation and a recognition of rights and addressing those socioeconomic gaps, because with this fast-growing population, we have to make sure that they achieve equity in terms of their ability to get a fantastic primary and secondary education, that they have equal opportunities to go on to post-secondary education, contribute to the economy, be able to live a long and healthy life. There are still huge gaps that exist in terms of things like life expectancy between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Canadians. So I would say today's news emphasizes the urgency in addressing those gaps.
Okay, let's talk about the growing population problem and the lost potential of that on Canada's First Nations. Professor Cindy Blackstock is Executive Director of the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society. Joins me in the studio. Nice to have you back.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Try and give me the reality that's out there. Let's talk about how this growing population, whether it's going to be able to meet its potential or be deprived of its potential, given the level of support they're getting on First Nations.
You know, what a lot of viewers don't know is that on reserve, almost every public service is funded to far lesser levels than other Canadians get. So everything from basics like water to things like sanitation to education, early childhood programs, help for senior citizens, that whole cadre creates a compound hardship for kids mm-hmm. and for the families who are caring for them.
Right.
It's been this long legacy of using racial discrimination as federal fiscal policy that piles up in the hopes and dreams of generation after generation of First Nations kids.
And you know, we're trying to get kids to have a promising start, but the shocking statistic in this census release is that half of the children at four or under are in foster care. I think it's like 8% of the non-Indigenous populations in foster care of children under four. My goodness, how on earth can you get a promising start with that statistic staring you in the face?
Well, you're exactly right. And what the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal found in 2016 is that Canada's inequitable funding of First Nations child welfare was driving kids into care unnecessarily because the families who are going through difficult times because of residential schools aren't given the opportunity to kind of get over that and get the supports they need. So the children are going into care. As recently as last week, we saw access to information documents come to light that from federal officials themselves saying kids are going into care because of inadequate supports. And what's critical for me is these are preschoolers. Mm-hmm. When we think about residential schools and we think of the apology and then we think of the 60s scoop and the apology, we got to ask ourselves, what do we learn if in